Well, good morning. I'd like to follow up briefly with something about that October meeting that President Ballard mentioned. He doesn't know this. In the afternoon of that day, I remember distinctly feeling frustrated, and I called my wife and I asked her to pray for me, and she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I don't know. I've got really great notes here, and I can't seem to stay on track with them. I kept getting off track." And I said, "I don't get it." And she, like all of y'all, she started laughing. She said, "Well, maybe you're not supposed to be on track." And I said, "Well, that's not why I'm calling you. I'm calling you to get back on track." And it wasn't until that afternoon that Mark told me what he was struggling with. I went back to the hotel that night, and I said, "Lord, you got to be kidding me. You're using me to convict him?" About starting a school, I know 10 people right off the top of my head that could do that far better than me. And so I called my wife again, and I said, "You're not going to believe what this idiot told me." And she chastised me. She said, "He's your friend." I said, "No, he's crazy." I said, "He wants to start a school." And I said, "He's broke." And I said, "He needs help." And then a couple of months later, I get an invitation to do PL13, and my wife said, "Is that Mark?" And I said, "Uh-huh." And I joined PL13, which stands for Project Launch, and we had a couple of meetings follow up, and all that to say that this school has been on my top 10 prayer list for quite some time. Didn't know when I came that weekend what was going on, why it was going on, my relationship with it. And it's been very minimal. I wish it could be far more involved. But trust me, even to this very morning, I was praying for all of you as well. And it leads me to another frustrating sermon. This doesn't fit the week. What God put in my heart does not fit the week that I would expect if I were here to hear something on the Lord's death or resurrection. But it does fit where students are. Just this semester alone, a fine young man who is one of my students, I took to Fort Worth to visit Southwestern Seminary, and he was offered a full scholarship. He is that good. He admitted to me, though, that he was struggling with the issue of sexual temptation. And then about a week ago, I received an email from a young lady. She didn't reveal a lot, but she also revealed that it was a struggle for her. And it was confirmation to me that what I'm going to preach on needs to be addressed from the pulpit in a chapel setting. I want to look at the life of Joseph this morning, and I want to look at overcoming life's obstacles dealing with sexual temptation. It's a topic that's at the forefront of our culture. If I can be quite honest about it this morning, we are a sex-obsessed society. I like good football games. You know, I'm not a New England Patriots fan, but you guys seem to have the market on that one. So, but every time I watch the Super Bowl, there's always a commercial, those new commercials. And at least 50 to 70% of those new commercials are involving a sexual connotation of some sort. Every one of them. And we don't realize it, but we're so saturated with it. If you look at AT&T commercials, there's the attraction of the pretty sales girl with the awkward guy coming in to buy the phone. And the hidden message behind that is, can he win her over if he buys an AT&T phone? And he walks out the door awkwardly. And we're so accustomed to that type of approach in our world, we don't give it a second thought as to the underlying meaning of what's going on there. Just this week alone, if you were to stop and think about the commercials you've watched on TV, if you were to stop and think about the magazines you flip through, the sexual images that you are exposed to inadvertently in this society creates a false sense of identity about a sexual relationship. It creates a false concept of what life is all about. Now you're thinking, Dr. Jones, are you one of those typical preachers who thinks sex is bad for us? No, not in the proper context. But I know a lot of people who are never satisfied, even in the proper context. They lead broken lives. They have reputations that they do not want to deal with. They have diseases that are not just harmful, but deadly. And so sexual temptation is not something that may happen to you. It is something that will happen to you. It's been around a long time. Turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 39, and we're going to read the first 10 verses and then pick it up from there. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. This was not a good day for Joseph. But the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight, served him, then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had put under his authority. This is a really pretty good day. Okay, this thing's going well. Now, before we read any further, I want you just to stop and take this in for a moment. He is sold into slavery. It is the fortunate day that he is bought by Potiphar. He proves himself to be a valid purchase, so to speak. He is faithful to serve Mr. Potiphar. And Potiphar observes something about his lifestyle. He's different. So, verse 5. It was from that time that he had made him overseer of the house of all that he had that the Lord blessed the Egyptian house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house in the field. Wonderful verse of how God is using someone in a society that is not conducive to honoring God. Now look at verse 6. He left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. This is complete trust of Joseph. Now, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. I mean, this guy had it going. Verse 7, it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. He has committed all these things he has to my hand. There's no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. Let's go to the Lord in prayer this morning. Father, I thank you for raising up this institution. I thank you for these students, the faculty who's here. They're committed to the single purpose of reaching New England with the gospel. It's not just an academic exercise. It is practical ministry that is being done. And Lord, that is rare in and of itself. So I pray this morning that what we're about to discuss, that what you put on my heart to share with these people, they would understand that the issue can of their ministry and their lives could be wrecked by carelessness if we don't lay it at the altar. Be with us this morning as we look into your word. In your name I pray. Amen. You know a little bit about Joseph. He was sold into slavery. He was put into a pit, basically left to die there. He didn't die. They came back. His brothers came back and found him. And they eventually sold him into slavery to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt and sold him again. A man named Potiphar, of course, that we just read, buys Joseph, gives him the position of manager after he watches Joseph and begins to understand that God is with him. Now, maybe even Joseph didn't realize it at the point in time in which Potiphar did. But God was there in the process of all that trauma and all that adversity, using Joseph in a powerful way. Now, Potiphar himself is a wealthy and very important man. He is not a fly-by-night guy. Joseph has the unique position of working for the modern-day Bill Gates, if you would, somebody really wealthy. And he says to him, "Look, everything in my household, you're a fair person. God blesses you. You do with it what you need to do with it. Now, I want to read verse 2 again just to get this concept. The Lord was with Joseph. Now, think about what that means. It means when he was put into the pit, when he was sold into slavery, when he was bought by Potiphar, when he was promoted to Potiphar's right-hand man. Even when Potiphar's wife was making advances toward him, look at that verse. God was with him, even right there. He prospered him. Now, are you ready for this? God put him in a place where his character would be severely tested. Every day she came toward him. Day by day she was relentless. And he had to deal with it. Morality would be the conduct of his life every day. Not his personal life, but something he had to deal with. Now, I know we have this understanding that, and perhaps an assumption that God will deliver us from evil. That's our prayer. That we would not be put in a place where we're tempted like that. But I want you to understand that God was with him in that very place. Now, it would have been so much easier if Joseph hadn't been there, but he was there. And God did not remove Joseph at first from this position. And so the real issue here, could Joseph serve God in that place while all that immorality was advanced toward him? So how do you deal with sexual temptation? Number one, I want you to understand the ramifications that Joseph had to deal with that you and I have to deal with. Sexual sin forfeits God's favor upon your life. Now, his brothers may have forgotten all about him, but not God. God prospered him. And we can only assume with good assurance that Joseph did not start at the top. So what that means is he didn't like the circumstances, he didn't want the circumstances, but he couldn't change the circumstances. So what he did was he went into Potiphar's house with the best attitude and the best approach to life that he possibly could in order to honor what God was doing. And what God was doing seemed so far-fetched for this young man. It's not where he wanted to be, but that's where he was. I didn't want to go to Las Vegas. And I cried and pleaded with the Lord not to send me there. I wanted to go to San Diego. And I did on vacation. But I never got there as a pastor. My wife was very sick and headed for a wheelchair. And I had to go out west. That was the doctor's requirements. And we went and visited San Diego. I knew a person in San Diego who was a pastor. He didn't hear God's voice. He sent my resume to Reno, Nevada. They sent it to Las Vegas. Three churches called me and I turned all of them down. And the fourth one called me, and I accepted. And I went with probably the worst attitude a person could have in his life. Hated every moment of it to the last year. You see the point here? Sometimes things are not the way we want them to be. And God knows that. And God doesn't change those circumstances. Serve him with your best. Look at verse 3 again. His master saw that the Lord was with him. This is an observation of Potiphar. He is looking at Joseph giving his best in bad circumstances, and he's got his eyes on him. And he can't help but notice that this guy is genuine. God is using him. I know what I need to do with this guy. I need to promote him. I need to put him in charge because I can trust him. If he can honor God as a slave, then surely I can promote him and God will bless me for advancing him. This is a good plan Potiphar has. So he says to Joseph, look, I want to put you in charge of everything. Everything in this house I completely trust you with. It's yours. God is with you. Great testimony, great character here. Then it starts. She is attractive. She is older. She is experienced. She can have anything she wants. And she doesn't need companionship. She wants a sexual relationship with this young man. She wants something from him she knows that she probably cannot have, but she wants it anyway. Now, I want you to hear me, young person, and I'll address the seniors in a second. There is such a thing as sexual attraction. It's normal between the opposite sexes. I don't know anyone in this country that marries someone because they hate them. Boy, would you look at her? Isn't she ugly? I'll just go in and ask her. We don't think like that. Look at him. He has bad breath. That's my date tonight. Yeah, we just don't do that. We look at who we look at because this little blonde-headed girl who had this Western accent, had these greenish-blue eyes, I thought was the gorgeous person I ever saw. And I told my dad, I'm going to marry her. And he said, you don't even know her. I said, it doesn't matter. And we did get married. She's still the most attractive woman I ever know. It's my wife, Stacy. She's from Denver. She has this Western accent. Now, it's been Southernized from Texas, but that's a different issue. But I don't know anyone that says, show me the ugliest person I can marry, and I'll just try to get a date with her. We don't do it that way. So it is natural to be attracted to the opposite sex. But that attraction should not be allowed to develop into an illicit, immoral relationship. He has the opportunity here. He has the means available. And there's nobody that could stop him. He is number two in charge of this entire household. And this is not just running domestic issues. This is a man of wealth and means. And she is there, she is available, she is pursuing him. It'd be so easy. Except, Joseph can't do it. He can't do something that is immoral for him and a sin against his God. Now, those of you who are seniors, maybe we're not as young as we used to be. I don't know who you are. I'm just addressing seniors, okay? But the same thing applies. I've had the case where I've had to go to a former deacon's house because he left his wife in a moment of crisis. She was crying. I have a good friend that the deacons of the church called me. Their pastor had left his wife in the parsonage because of a woman he met on the internet. It does happen. Once you cross that line, we get more than what we ask for. What are the ramifications in bad reputation? You can have a bad reputation that may never go away. Now, this is not fair to Rahab the harlot, but every time her name is mentioned, it's always in that connection. It's never Rahab the godly, Rahab the... It's never mentioned that way. Even in Hebrews chapter 11, it's Rahab the harlot. Now, I believe she was saved, or she wouldn't be in Hebrews chapter 11. But you see what I'm saying? The reputation of who she was followed her throughout her life. And we may not worry about it when we're young, but when you find the young woman who has those gorgeous blue-green eyes and blonde hair, then you meet her parents, that reputation walks right in there with you. And do you really want that reputation, young ladies, to follow you? It could result in unwanted pregnancy. I really believe that one of the reasons the abortion rate is so high in this country, over 50 million, is because we sacrifice pregnancy on the altar of convenience. Not medical necessity, not incestuous rape, but out of sheer convenience. Unwanted pregnancy. Over 20 known sexually transmitted diseases in this country right now. Nearly two-thirds of them occur with people under the age of 25. It's terrible. And these issues are not worth the pain or the shame or the humiliation. So we've got to realize that sexual gratification may forfeit a life of favor. Oh, it's seemingly harmless flirtation, but it destroys marriages. It destroys a person's reputation as they move through life. We've got to learn that abstinence and fidelity are still God's method of preserving one's dignity. You see, in the Old Testament, idolatry is often compared to sexual immorality. You have served another god, and I'm a jealous god over that. He compares the two. And the idea of loving someone else other than one God has brought to you is a form of idolatry. God told Israel many times, you've loved someone else. Yes, I do believe abstinence is not only possible, but achievable. I've performed one or two weddings in my day. And I've never had this happen. I've never had someone come back to me after their honeymoon and say this, Brother Marvin, I really hate the fact that I was pure for my husband or my wife. Never had that happen. But I've heard this testimony. Not many times, but I've heard it. I'm glad I waited for the right one. All right, number two. Not only do we need to understand the ramifications, we need to understand the process. Sexual temptation always reoccurs. God put him in a place where he would be tested. He put him in a place where he knew what would happen day after day after day. Look at verse 10. So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day. Not just on Mondays or Wednesdays or Fridays, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every day. He was a slave, and yet he was promoted. There it is, day after day. Now, to some extent, we understand this. Turn on your TV tonight, as you will. Watch the commercials. Think about what it would be like not to have to deal with about 50% of them. Day after day. She's relentless. She's pursuing him. She could not have him. There's going to be a price to pay for this. God did not change his employment status, his position at all. He didn't remove Mrs. Potiphar. And so day after day after day, this takes place. And finally, this is going to come to a point where something's going to have to be done. Now, we quit reading in verse 10, but look at verse 11. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work. None of the men of the house were inside. Wow. There's nobody here to verify any story. This is between two people. It's going to come down to he said versus she said. This is going to get ugly quick. She caught him by his garment. She is forcing the issue. She grabs him in a violent way to kind of like jerk him in there. That's basically what the meaning is here. And she is persistent. She has been scorned day after day. She has been rejected day after day. And finally the point comes where she's not going to take the rejection anymore. She grabs him and says, "This is the day. Sleep with me." And he will not do it. Now look at verse 12. He left his garment in her hand and fled. He knows that he's got to get out of there. Potiphar, by the way, is probably a military personnel. Connections with the police and the military. He's not going to get far. But he does the best he can in this circumstances. Look what happens. He's gone. And so it was when she saw that he had left the garment in her hand and fled outside that she called to the men of her house and said, "See, he has brought..." Now, this is one of the few times you're going to see a racial slur in the Bible, but here it is. "He has brought to us a Hebrew to mock us." He meaning her husband. He came to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And when that happened, that he heard my voice, I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and he fled outside. This Hebrew guy. This is what they do all the time. This is really the idea behind this. She is making a racial slur here, so that there would be action taken later. Well, a few times you'll read something like that. He was absolutely innocent, but the circumstances were against him. She has the robe for evidence. She has an ethnic issue. She's betraying. She uses both against him. Joseph is going back to jail. Look at verse 16. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. Then she spoke to him, which is Potiphar, with words like these, saying, the Hebrew servant. When it starts out like that, there is no way he's going to get a fair trial. It's just not going to happen. He's already been judged and condemned. He is going to prison on false charges. Now, I want to close this out. I have a lot of respect for Joseph here. He was not weakened by the circumstances. You see, God knows where you and I are, and he knows the place we're going to be serving. But it didn't break him down in a place where it could have. Dr. Jones, did you say you hated Las Vegas? Every bit of it. Until I had a bleeding ulcer and I saw life a little differently. Why did I hate it? Because I was exposed to every type of sexual immorality in my church that you could be exposed to. Gambling addictions, problems in this area, the sexual attraction of members who had intermarried and stayed in there, problems in the youth group. To be honest with you, I'd go down the strip just so I could witness to lost people. It was a relief. That's how bad it was. I'm not kidding. That was a fun day if I got to do that. And then the rumor started, he's going down there gambling. Not on what you pay. You know? I looked at that little church and I thought, Lord, you got to be kidding me. If there was ever a Sodom and Gomorrah that we tolerated, it had to be the church I was pastoring. Now, I got to be honest, that is not how a pastor should view his church. Okay? That's about as wrong as it can be. But I really struggled to understand what was going on there. And what I found out had more to do with me than them. I was becoming weakened by the circumstances. Instead of seeing the glory of God at work, I saw Satan have a field day. If you plan to resist temptation, you must not be weakened by your personal circumstances. God knows where you're at. He knows what you need. The last year I was there was the most productive year we had. We relocated that church. We raised $1 million. That church is still there. The first 3 years, probably the worst 3 years of my life ever in ministry, because I allowed the circumstances to dictate how I would do ministry. Number two, do not be deceived by persuasion. My husband doesn't meet my needs, or she is much more attractive than who my wife is, or who will ever know? Look, we're going to be married anyway. You see, we got to discern the times in which we live in. We do not need to be deceived by the gentle persuasion of what we're hearing. She could have said like this, my husband will not know. You're number two in his household. Who is going to challenge you? But he didn't listen to it. Number three, do not be gentle with your emotions. Yes, I'm from Texas, okay? I'd much rather work and do ministry in the West outside the Bible Belt, but most of my life, except for that one brief four lifetimes that I spent in Las Vegas, God's had me in the Deep South. In the Deep South, we practically invented the double standard. Okay? We ought to patent it. And what I mean by that is we will smile to you all the time thinking, you poor soul, okay? Now, the word bless your heart, no one knows what that means, okay? You come to pray and I'll say something like, well, bless your heart. You know what that means? I don't want to be you. That's terrible. Bless your heart. We don't say that, though. We say it a nice way. Just, oh, man, bless your heart. I feel for you. All the while thinking, God, I'm glad it's him that's being destroyed right now, not me. That's the double standard we have. So I want to move past that. Now, if you ever heard that, you're going to hear me say something here that probably may not sound too spiritual. I'm going to be honest about it, okay? You don't need to be gentle with your emotions, okay? You don't need to be gentle with them. You heard that right. Emotions do not have to rule your life. Your inner feelings, they plead for satisfaction. They want that which you cannot have. It's understandable, but you don't have to acquiesce to them. Now think about Joseph for a moment. In verse 8, he says no. He refuses. In verse 9, he calls it a great evil. In verse 10, he finally leaves. And in verse 12, he is set up for false statements. And he has to live with all of that action, and he did the right thing each time. And maybe sometimes we need to be extreme. So when my daughter started dating, I gave her my cell phone number. Now, she had it before then, but I reiterated it. And I said, Mackenzie, if you find yourself in a circumstance that you don't like, you pull out my cell number and you tell the guy that anything he suggests, I have to approve. And she said, Dad, I'm not going to do that. I think you might. And my wife said, why are you letting her date somebody you don't like? I said, it's not that she's dating somebody I don't like. It's she's dating somebody I don't trust. And she said, who's that? I said, everybody. So years later, Mackenzie's 21 now. And I said, Mackenzie, did you ever think you needed to make a phone call to me? And she said this, I never made a phone call to you. I said, yeah, I know that. Did you think you needed? She said, I only produced my cell phone one time. I said, really? I didn't know that. And she said, I pulled out my cell phone and I told the guy, my dad would like to weigh in on this decision. Now, she's got my personality, so I can see her saying it that way. And he looks at her and he said, what's your dad got to do with it? And she, and according to her, she said, he wants to know about things like this. The phone call was never made. We had this discussion about a month ago, and this is what she said. She's dating a young man, and they may progress to the marital stage. She said, Dad, on our honeymoon, don't even go there. I don't want to have a phone call from you. But sometimes you just have to say no and mean it and live with it. No, it's not going to happen. Now, I can hear some of you saying, well, that's not really nice. No. And neither is unwanted pregnancy or an STD or a bad reputation. You cannot be nice and loving to evil and be unharmed by it. Do not be gentle with your emotions. I'm going to ask you to stand this morning. I'm not going to ask you to show hands, or I'm not going to even ask you to come forward. I'm just going to pray with you for a moment, and I'm going to turn this over to the president of this wonderful school. Father, this morning, as you know, I struggled with this because it just doesn't fit the occasion of this week. And yet at the same time, I know it probably resonates with several people in here, several godly young men and young women who may be in this situation. They're just struggling. And I pray, Lord, for their emotional, mental, and spiritual health. I pray for their resolve to be your servant. So, Lord, whatever you've done this morning, however you've spoken to their hearts, may your will be accomplished. In your name I pray.